This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Yes, it's me, Mark Clement, welcoming you to the official EFL podcast as once more we'll bring you all the highs and lows that are to come from the 2021 season across the EFL's Championship, League One and League Two divisions. I don't think we can pretend it's been a regular close season, but we're never short of talking points in the EFL. Six new managers in the Championship. How will those teams relegated from the Premier League fare, let alone Wickham Wanderers playing in the same division? And in Leagues 1 and 2, well, apart from the playoffs, they haven't kicked a ball since the middle of March. And of course, so reliant upon revenue through the turnstiles. And yet at this stage, we don't know when supporters are going to actually be allowed into their stadiums. A comprehensive preview of the season to come on the official EFL podcast. So over the course of the season, we're going to bring you all the people and the stories behind the headlines. But where better to kick things off than with Mr. EFL himself? His managerial career started in the Sunday leagues over 40 years ago. He's repeatedly talked about calling it a day. Yet in June, he responded to Middlesbrough's SOS call to save them last season. And he signed a contract to take them through the coming campaign, which will take in Neil Warnock's 72nd birthday, his 1500th game in the dugout. And maybe, just maybe, a record-breaking ninth promotion. And here's what I want to know, Neil, straight away. How accurate at this point in the season is your radar as to how well your team is going to do this season?
It's difficult, really, because we've not signed anybody yet. We've Grant Hall's come in, which was agreed before I came in, really. And we're trying to bring players in, but we've found it quite difficult at the moment. But we're confident there will be some players coming in. So, I mean, you look at the squad and we escaped relegation on the last day of the season and we've lost eight players since then. So you wouldn't feel overly confident, but they're a good group. They've done ever so well pre-season. We will bring some players in and I think we can have an exciting season. I don't know, when you look at some of the teams involved, like we play Watford this week, and I think they probably will be the team that will... If anybody's going to walk away with it, I think Watford will be that team with the squad they've got. Anybody finishing above Watford, I think, will go up. So we've got a difficult start, probably the most difficult of anybody with the games, Bournemouth to follow. But sometimes you've got to play them, haven't you? So the lads, like I said, they've been in good spirits. We've played some good stuff, but we're a little bit short on the bench. We haven't got an awful lot to change the formation. And I think that, confident that we're looking not rather than the bottom end, probably the mid-table area, and then anything's possible when you're in that area. There's not that much difference between mid-table and the playoffs, Clem. I don't think we're quite there just yet. I think that when you look at the teams around you, I can see sort of 8 or 9 more teams probably having a better chance than us at the moment. But, I would have said that about Cardiff as well. I think I said if we could be around the top 10 and come Christmas time, we'd have a chance. And I think that's the same with Middlesbrough, really.
Neil, I know you well enough to ask you this question. Come on. You've presumably made enough money from your career. You're 71 already. You've got a lovely place down in Cornwall. You've just bought a place in northern Italy that you absolutely adore going to. Why do you want to put yourself through all this again?
I think on a Friday night, I asked myself the same question, if I'm honest. What the hell am I doing here? When my stomach's churning and I'm thinking about all the problems we've got, big match tomorrow, waking up Saturday morning, I have to have my breakfast at 9 o'clock because I can't eat anything else till 6 o'clock after that. And I don't honestly know, Clem. I love the Championship. I've got to say, and I know I've said it before about this is my last one or all sorts of things.
You've said it about 6-8 times, haven't you?
Since Sheffield United, my plan was to finish at Sheffield United 2005-06 and then have a great time, really. But I was disappointed how I left Sheffield United. I thought I was let down a little bit there. And so that made me more determined. And I'm so glad I did as well because I love me Simon Jordan and, time at Palace and QPR. I always thought below Watford was the pits. You can't go down there. And they were two fantastic clubs. Great fans and great times. I had great times there. So I don't think I would have come back into it. It was only the phone call from Steve, really. I've always had a lot of time for Steve Gibson. He's always supported managers, and even in a difficult financial climate like this is, I've always wanted to show him what I'm about, really. I've had opportunities two or three times where I've nearly taken over the last 20 years, never really come about. And when he asked me to help him, I had a chat with Sharon, and because of the virus and everything, we're not going over to Italy at the minute or anything. So she thought it was a good idea, like I did, and I was in my car within half an hour. You know, I'm pleased. It's got me going again. I really buzz in it. I see the lads do things now and enjoying it, and that's what I want them to do. I want them to play with enjoyment and try and give as much of the club and the fans that have had all this depressive virus to deal with up here. You know, Middlesbrough's rife again. You know, it's a difficult place at the minute. So we want to try and put smiles on the faces if we can.
How hard do you have to work to get into the psyche of your players? Because, again, with respect, you know, you are old enough to be their granddads.
A late father, you mean, Clem? You mean a late father?
Yeah, all right, fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was in my 50s when I had my last baby.
I did me maths. You know what I'm saying?
All right, carry on.
But I mean, you had them all around the farm when you were down in the south.
We haven't got a farm, Clem. I've told you before, you read too many things. I have a tractor, a 1953 tractor, which is an old Massey Ferguson, which I love. I call her Bessie, and she's lovely, and I get on it now and then, and I have a few acres, but that doesn't class as a farm.
Have you got chickens?
No. Oh, I've got chickens, yeah. But, well, I had chickens. Unfortunately, the fox had the last lot, so we've got to reinvest in some more in the near future.
So you're down in the southwest, you had all the boys playing Plymouth a couple of times, and you got them all round for a barbecue and cook for them, presumably, and stuff like that?
Yeah, I thought it was important that. I get more out of talking to players when they're relaxed, when they're not off guard, but when they're enjoying something a little bit, not in a pressure situation. And I've always found when I've taken them to Plymouth, it's a great week. Plymouth Argyle were fabulous with us. They let us have two great, you know, very good friendlies. We trained at a place called Liscard, and they looked after us as well. So we had a really good week. And the barbecue just as important, because I talk to people when I'm cooking. I talk to players and I'll have a little chat with them, and then I'll have a walk round when they're sat around different areas and talk to groups and two or three. And it's times like that, Clem, when you find little things out about your players, characters and things. And it was obvious to me on that trip that the dressing room team spirit was very, very good. I'm not saying it wasn't, but I think it's been outstanding this pre-season. And, you know, I think I told the lads that Klopp said in a few weeks ago that they weren't the best team, but they had the best team spirit, and they had the best desire. And I think that's a minimum requirement, really. And yes, I think when you have two or three bad results, we've got a lot of young lads, which you get in the Championship, you know. But I also think we've got ability that I've never had in certain areas. And I'm looking forward to trying to bring the best out of certain players and contribute to us being a force.
Have you worked on your confrontational style over the last few years? As you get older, do you mellow ever so slightly, or have you still got it in your bag to stand up to whoever you need to stand up to?
I don't think you change. I mean, I don't rant as much at the referees and fourth officials, although, you know, I did say one or two things last week against Shrewsbury. But yeah, I don't think you can ever lose that. You can't change the way you are as a manager. And I wouldn't want to. Yes, you look back and there's certain things I regret over my career, but you're bound to have moments like that. I just think that I've always been a passionate sort of man, and I want my players to be passionate. And I don't like people pulling out of tackles or turning their backs on things. And, you know, we conceded a couple on Friday with things that I won't tolerate. So there's things I don't like. And, you know, I have my time and place where I'm strict and I put the letter of the law, etc. But at the same time, I like them to want to come into training and think, wow, it's another great day to go into training. I'm going to do everything for this manager. And I think I did a bit the other day with an article with somebody, and we were talking about my 8 promotions, Clem, and they still all have reunions. They still all come back, and they're all the same players that they were, and we still talk about things. And I loved seeing that, because a lot of the people that get promotion nowadays and kiss the badge every other week, you know, once they've left the club, that's it. They'll never see them again. But I think that's part of the team spirit that I try and get in the teams involved, because it does go a long way. You need a bit of team spirit in the Championship. And I think they can get better. I think with, you know, some additions, 4 or 5 additions as well, where we've got, at the moment, if we have a couple of injuries, we're struggling. But I think if we, you know, we can do the right business in the next couple of weeks, we can give anybody a good run for the money, I think, in the league this year.
Neil, if I had to ask you to take one moment from those 40-plus years of management, you can only have one. The one outstanding moment that, God forbid, but you were lying towards the end of your life and you wanted it replayed on a screen in front of you, what would you choose?
I don't think you can. I mean, every playoff win at final, I've got memories of crowds, you know, Notts County going around 2 successive promotions and driving around this island in Nottingham, waving at everybody outside a pub for about 10 minutes, going around the same island. Plymouth Argyle, green and white, scarves coming down the motor, M5 and the train, everything, the open-top bus ride, Huddersfield Town, the horns going all night long in the town, everything, you name it. Scarborough was an amazing. And I think you have to go back probably to your Scarborough days for that. I mean, we were 50-1 to finish bottom. We should have finished bottom, according to the bookies. I took about 40 players over to try and sign them, and I signed 17 players. There were only 2, Neil Thompson and Neil Sellers, 2 lads that were left from the original group. We were next to the bottom of the league in October, and we finished up winning the league. And to get automatic promotion into the Football League, I mean, I remember being in bed with my head under my pillows, listening to Stafford Rangers versus Barnet, praying that Stafford Rangers could get a result against Barnet, which would mean we were up. I remember Sharon running up and telling me they scored a goal, and my mate Paul Evans was there. And the relief when that final whistle went and I got out of bed. I couldn't even get out of bed. I couldn't listen to the radio. And they were great times, because I was just a young manager then. You know, taking my old club, you know, when I turned up at Sheffield United, 8,000 crowd the game before I turned up with Port Vale. No training ground. I used to put a bucket under the roof to catch the water in the training ground at Sheffield United. And you go to the ground now, it's an amazing ground, a fantastic training ground. And to, you know, when I left, it was 25,000 average. You know, I feel really proud about what I did there with Derek Dooley, a great man. You know, it's impossible to pick one thing, Clem. There's memories for me everywhere that I think about, you know, and it will always be that. I can even remember the bad memories, you know, at Bury, where we've got nothing and we used to clear the dog muck up off the pitch before we had a training session. You can't forget where you come from. I've got great memories. I've never had a chance to actually take over a club at the top end of a table. I've always had to build clubs, but I've enjoyed that. Somebody said to me, if you picked a team that you wouldn't want to play against, I'd be very high up the top of the table. And I think that was a compliment. And, you know, when I went to Cardiff and, you know, the number of people, well, I didn't want you. I didn't like you before you come, Warnock, you know, but I'm glad you're here. So I like that type of thing. I like when I leave a club to leave it in a better situation than I took over.
Can you park all that hate figure stuff, the confrontation stuff, or does it sit with you afterwards? Or once something like that, an incident has happened, is it just part of your life and you move on from it quite quickly?
Yeah, I mean, because I was at Cardiff, you know, I've always had, even Crystal Palace with Bristol City fans and things like that, you know. And so I've always had Barney, you know. I mean, when we used to go to Ipswich, we used to chuck a tenner or a fiver in each, all the staff, how long it would be before they called me a banker. You know, oh, I think it's something similar to that anyhow.
Yeah, yeah.
And I used to win it every time. I used to say 20 seconds or 40 seconds, you know, after kickoff. But I know that they respected me as well. And I think the Bristol City fans respect me as well, even though, you know, they'll have a go at me and things. And, you know, they've made their ground into a fabulous stadium, Steve Lansdowne and everything. And I love to go there, even though I know I'm going to get slaughtered. It's like going to Hillsborough for me. It was horrible going to Hillsborough with no fans. I like it when I turn up on the bus and they give me that welcome, the 50-yard walk into the dressing room.
I love asking you about stuff like this because most of us in our everyday lives try and avoid confrontation, try and avoid conflict, but you seem to absolutely thrive upon it. Listen, we've got six new managers in the Championship. Obviously, we've got the three that have come down, Watford, Bournemouth and Norwich. Three that have come up in Coventry. What a job Mark Robbins has done. Rotherham, one of your former teams. Wickham, first time in the Championship. Great survivals for Luton. Barnsley at the end of last season. How will Brentford and Forest do, having slipped up towards the end of the last campaign? Is this about as open as it's been, do you think, Neil, over the last few years?
Yeah, I think it is. I think the teams have improved. Everybody can beat everybody else on the day. And that's the beautiful thing about the Championship. You can't predict anything. You know, your predictions could be absolutely 100% wrong every week in the Championship. You just don't know. The three teams coming out, I'm really pleased. You know, Ainsworth, I think the Wickham was a fantastic achievement. And, you know, I love the gear he wears on the bench, you know, with his guitar. I think you know, Warnie at Rotherham has done an amazing job. And I'm so pleased for him. You know, Chairman Tony Stewart's good there. And the fans and the little club, it's really homely there. So really pleased for them. And like you said, Coventry, without any home to do what they've done is amazing. So it's great for those three clubs to be involved. We're the same, you know, we're looking at your Watford and your Norwich and, you know, the teams that have come down, your Bournemouth. They all should do really well with the parachute playments, but it doesn't necessarily work like that, football. If it did, everybody would win the pools every week. So it'll be interesting to see. We just want to compete and enjoy ourselves and try and give the fans something. And I think that's all you can all try. And that's what we'll be doing here.
There's only one prediction I'm going to make, and that is whatever happens at Borough for you this season, I can guarantee in a couple of years' time we'll be having this interview. You'll be somewhere else. You'll still be talking about retirement, but it won't happen. You'll still be saying Sharon was quite happy for you to go out the door,
no,
pack
I'll
your bag
divorced.
And go to the other end,
Clem,
of the country.
Trust me, once this virus is finished and we've got a cure for it, hopefully an injection or something, she would kill me if you ever said that to us. So don't ever bring that up if Sharon's with me, will you?
Fine. Your secret is safe with me. It's been a pleasure as always. Thanks for joining us on the EFL podcast, Neil.
Okay, cheers.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
There really are few people in the game that understand the highs and lows of life in the EFL better than Neil Warnock. But of course, that's in terms of matters on the pitch. What's it like at boardroom level for those charged with the unenviable task of trying to steer their club through the past 6 months of a global pandemic? One man who knows all about that is the owner and chairman of League One, Swindon Town, Lee Power. And first things first, we've got to pass our congratulations on, because I'm a little bit worried that you winning the League Two title got buried during all of this, Lee. Have you had a chance to celebrate?
No, not really, Clem. We went to like a local pub on a Saturday. We took the lads there, but like you say, you can't really celebrate either at the moment. You know, when you're all standing 2 metres apart, and you can't do this and you can't do that. So it's been, Clem, honestly, it's been, like I say, everyone's where it's just been so strange. And I think I got told by a member of the media that we've been promoted. I don't know, you know, in the history of football that, you know, a chairman or a manager gets a phone call saying, oh, by the way, you've just won the league, like, you know. Right. And then, you know, then you move on again. It's literally been one of those real strange seasons that, you know, everyone's going to remember for the wrong reasons. But you can't take that away. And I said that to Richie. I said, Richie, look, it's on your CV. It's on the lad's CV. You've all worked hard. And we are where we are. But strange is definitely the word, Clem.
Yeah. How have you coped professionally? How have you coped personally, Lee?
Yeah, listen, we're coming into our seventh month now with no income, which for football clubs is totally unheard of. I mean, any business is totally unheard of. So, you know, we're not just whining because we're involved in football. There's many businesses that are entwined with the football club, and obviously their businesses have been the same. If you would have said to me, Lee, you're still alive, i.e., football club living and breathing by the middle of September with no income, I would have laughed at you, Clem, back in March. I mean, credit has to go to the EFL. You know, they've managed to push money that was due. Like we had our August money in June and July. We just had our January TV money to get us through the next bit. And that's on top of obviously us having to personally, as in owners, you know, topping the clubs up, and it's not just the players' wages, you know, you've still got other bills that you have to adhere to and pay. And to say it's been hard is an understatement.
You know, as our listeners are listening to this, obviously Cambridge are in the middle of those two test events that they're holding to try and trial supporters coming back in. I mean, I guess everybody in the whole of the EFL structure is looking at that and just keeping fingers crossed that it can be done safely, responsibly, everybody stays okay, but ultimately gets those numbers back in the ground as quickly as possible, Lee.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. Listen, it's not an easy situation, and you can't go around blaming people. It's difficult times and very nervous as well. You know, you're an owner of a football club. You're the person that's got to keep that ship afloat, and you don't know where it's going to come from.
So in the same way that the general public may be risking losing their job, have been having sleepless nights, when you're carrying something that's held so dear to the hearts of so many people, you must have had a few sleepless nights yourself, Lee, I'm guessing.
No, you do. And I think that's the only thing that sometimes supporters sometimes don't realise, you know. I think they realise it is, you know, you always hear the saying, it's the fans' clubs, and it is, you know. There's people that have been going to watch Swindon, you know, it's gone with their dads, gone with their granddads, their dad's dad. You know, we've been going, like, say, you know, 120-odd years. I'm just a custodian at the minute, and when I leave, there'll be another load that will take over and go through these periods of time when they look after that football club, try and do their best for it. And even in, like you say, difficult times like this, people look to things like the football club as their little bit of light and their little bit of happiness, you know, when things are hard. But obviously, you know, we can't even provide them with that at the moment, you know, which is disappointing. And going back to, like, say, getting promotion, not being able to share that with the fans, and, you know, who've gone week in, week out to watch their teams, difficult, but you've got to put it into perspective. And, you know, we're a lot better off than other industries and other people, you know, who are unfortunately, you know, got bigger problems than that.
Yeah. Well, at least we get going football wise this weekend, and fingers crossed, as I say, those test events sort of work out. Can you be competitive in League One after your success last season, Lee?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, listen, what I'm blessed with, I believe, you know, I've got one of the best young managers outside of the Premier League. I think there's no doubt about that. It was a bit airy, scary trying to keep hold of him through the summer and towards the end of the season. You know, got approached by a few clubs for his services, which he's very loyal. And you know that people are going to come for someone like that because of the job he's done here. So, you know, we're blessed to have someone like that, and he's worked fantastically well with Paul Jewell. You know, obviously with Paul's experience in the Premier League and the EFL, he's obviously director of football now, and the two of them, you know, have worked fantastically well along with all the other staff. So if you've got that as a foundation, which we have, and they manage to wheel and deal and bring the players in, there's no reason, I'm not saying that we're going to go and do this and go and do that, but with a bit of luck with injuries and everything else, I'd be very disappointed if you know, we wasn't in and around the playoff.
Wow. I mean, there's something, isn't there, when you get that arrangement right, that synergy between boardroom, right manager, young manager with the backup of experienced former manager as director of football. Those moments are rare in football. I mean, you're coming up to, what, 7 years since your full takeover of the club, if my memory serves me right. I mean, you know, there are difficulties along the way, and to have what you have now is a sort of special combination and chemistry.
It is. And during that period, you know, I've had a number of different managers, like most football clubs too, over that 7 years, some good, some bad. Some indifferent. Obviously, I've made plenty of mistakes along the way as well. But with Richie, I think if you look at the team as well, if you speak to anyone in the team, you know, Richie's more like a friend than he is a manager, and that's the way it's been. We're all like a group of friends, you know, we're a group of mates. Sociably, you know, if we're away with a team, you know, we're going to have a drink and something to eat together. Obviously, there has to be an hierarchy like any organisation. But, you know, fundamentally, we're all together. We all sit there, we all go out, we win and lose together. And I think that's the closest that I've had at this football club since I've owned it. And I think that's what's got us through. And I do truly believe, you know, with one or two, we need a lot of luck with injuries because we're at quite a tight squad. But I do believe we'll go close then.
Lee, keep fighting. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks, Lim. Take care. Keep safe, mate.
This is the official EFL podcast.
So So for some, it's been a long time coming, but we are finally on the cusp of a new season in the EFL. And while things aren't quite back to normal just yet, there's certainly a marked sense of relief and excitement amongst all 72 clubs across all three divisions to get going again and return to what we know and love. Now, those of you with a few grey hairs may remember that I actually kicked off the official EFL podcast over a decade ago, and one of my very first guests was a Leeds United midfielder with a Jesus hairstyle. Well, he's hung up his boots and he's chopped his locks since then, but David Pratton is still very much involved in football as Sky Sports' main EFL presenter, and he's going to help me preview the new campaign. And up until about 30 seconds before giving that introduction, Pruts, I was mighty impressed because I have from the Sky Sports website Prutton's predicted championship table, and it looks to me like this, like you've predicted four of the top six and got the two automatics, but I now realise this table has actually been constructed by pulling together your result predictions on a game-by-game basis.
Yes, it's something that me and a very good friend of mine do on a weekly basis. Predicting the championship is like trying to herd flies, as you quite rightly know, Clem. And it's the thing that Simeon, my partner in crime that does it at Sky, he takes great glee in showing me screen grabs of absolutely incensed Twitter posts about me having the audacity to say that one team may lose on a weekend and one team may not get promoted to the Premier League. And he takes great delight in sending me those. We go into it with as much good faith as possible, with as much prep research as we possibly can manage. And barring the occasional aberration, I'm sure you might be able to pull me up on this, we haven't done too bad. Teams are in the right ballpark, shall we say.
Oh, they are. But what I realise is this is constructed by predicting one game, then the next. I thought you'd predicted this table before last season had started. Honestly, please give me the lottery numbers. Okay, do you want to start at the bottom in League Two and then work our way up?
Might as well. It's up to you. It's your gig, mate. You're in charge. I'm happy to be led.
Okay, then let's start in League Two. So we've got Barrow back after 48 years. Harrogate. Am I allowed to say where you live? Well, it's too late. I have done now. in the league. Stevenage after their reprieve. They stay in the league. Macclesfield were relegated during the short, close season. I guess the one story that's catching my eye is we're right in the middle of Cambridge United's trials of letting in supporters as we're recording this. Mm. I mean, this is going to be absolutely pivotal, particularly to those League One and Two clubs as we move forward, because the sooner we can get the supporters back, the sooner they can get 35-40% of their income streams back online again.
It's absolutely imperative. We miss them all dearly, haven't we? And in the whole kind of grand scheme of talking about where football was going to go off the back of lockdown, it was quite obviously and understandably tilted towards what the Premier League was going to do and how that was going to filter down. And there were various chairmen across those two divisions, Leagues One and Two, that weren't happy with the way things were being discussed. And that's, I mean, because everybody who's in charge of their own specific football clubs have got to fight tooth and nail for the best possible way of going about it. And I absolutely understand that. Now we're back in a position where actively they can go out and do what they are in theory paid to do, but what helps paying those players in what they're doing is, as you say, getting people through the turnstiles and through the doors. And I think we all sit here with very, very bated breath, just hoping, don't we? And again, in the broader context, there's bigger things at stake, but the ones that these little pockets of responsibility that these football clubs do have, they're hoping, fingers crossed, to get through into the next stage, which hopefully leads on to the next stage, isn't it?
Yeah, but you use the word responsibility. I mean, I guess we have to trust that football fans can be trusted, that when they've had three or four pints and there's an emotive moment in a big match, that they're not going to lose all sense of responsibility to the country to try and decrease the numbers getting infected with this ghastly disease. I'm talking about suddenly people jumping on top of each other to celebrate, kissing each other, screaming at the top of their voices, etc., etc. So I think that's a message we have to put out there, isn't it? Be responsible in your watching of football.
I think so. I also think that sometimes we take fans not only for granted, but sometimes feel that they've got to be spoon-fed exactly the way to go about stuff. I think football fans, the vast majority, are extremely responsible. They turn up to enjoy the spectacle for what it is. There's no difference, if you like, that warning being put out to warning people at the tail end of a Saturday night. Now you can go into pubs, now you can go into bars in certain parts of the country. The same applies. Responsibility across all demographics has got to be key, but sometimes common sense isn't so common, is it, unfortunately?
Well, it's not, but it's worth us just reminding everybody. Absolutely. You've done so brilliantly there. So, I mean, listen, here's the sort of general promotion sort of favourites. Bolton, Salford, Mansfield on the list I've got here, sort of the favourites for the automatic places. Exeter, Tranmere, Cheltenham, Port Vale in the sort of playoff places. Any particular names stand out there for you? Anybody that you're thinking, yep, could be their season?
Well, I think given what Bolton have done with regards to not only recruitment of players with like Sarsfield, Taft, Owen Doyle as well, I mean, that's obviously a big name for them. And Ian Everett, I mean, the wonderful job that he did with Barrow. I mean, if he gets Bolton playing in the way that he managed to get Barrow playing, then that's a big tick in the box moving in the right direction, because we've covered Bolton so many times over the last few seasons and it's just been lurching. As I mean, there'll be a few Football League clubs that can relate to that type of lurching from one kind of not nice situation to another, shall we say. So that's the most polite way of putting it. And yeah, I think they've got to stand out. Salford City, given the men that are involved in running that club, they're in a hurry to get places, you feel, don't you? And I understand and appreciate and really admire the bullishness of that. I mean, I do understand within the kind of footballing firm that Salford might be seen in or interpreted in different ways. But my God, accentuate your positives. You know what I mean? If you've got the benefit of investment and the type of stellar kind of ownership, then why not? Why not use it to the best of its ability?
And this is the world that we live in right now, which is, let's be honest, all football clubs, the whole structure of professional football is based now around benefactors, and some are going to be fortunate enough to get brilliant ones who back them to the hilt, who do things solidly. And unfortunately, there are going to be some others where things are much more tricky along there. So, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people thinking, I wish they'd invested in my football club.
Yeah, and I remember that there was a great quote from Sean Dyche. This was a few seasons ago now, talking about, Burnley are the very example of cutting the cloth accordingly and, I mean, keeping within the realms and like being very, very sensible. And in his very gruff way, said, yeah, that's because we have to. If I had loads of money to spend, my God, I would spend it. And I'm paraphrasing, but that just goes to show that you've got to put and work with what's in front of you. And yeah, those two teams stand out. Exeter, you feel they've got to banish this kind of hoodoo at some stage, haven't they? They're getting so close so many times. And again, it's a part of the country and it's a club that I've always enjoyed visiting and actively looking at their particular journey, if you like. And they've done it before. You get the feeling that if they manage to climb over that hill this season and maybe have half an eye on those automatic places, then that gets them further along the line, doesn't it?
Yeah. There'll be a surprise name in there as well. Listen, if we haven't mentioned your club, it's a long old season. We're here every single week on the official EFL podcast. We will be talking to people from your club, all the headlines and the people and the stories. So don't worry, we will get to you. Let's move on to League One, where so many big clubs, Prutz, Hull, Ipswich, Portsmouth, Sunderland, as well as those two names I've just previously mentioned. I mean, one of those biggies has got to get out this time around, haven't they?
Well, they've got to, for their own footballing salvation, shall we say. Plenty of clubs down there that have, as we know, rubbed shoulders with Premier League teams in recent seasons. Pompey, you feel, perennial favourites, as are Sunderland. I think they suffered off the back of their slow start, you feel, Pompey. And that second part of the season where they did gain some real momentum, obviously couldn't make up ground on the positions that really needed to be made ground up on. But it's a squad that's got plenty of quality. Peterborough, there's something about them, the bit between the teeth. I wouldn't discount them from the owner all the way down to the playing staff. There'll be something about them that gets gets them motivated, shall we say, going into it.
Yeah, they have lost a huge asset, obviously, in Ivan Toney going to Brentford, but they've gained one in the man who's, well, I think you can put his names in any order, Johnson Clark Harris, Harris Clark Johnson, Clark Johnson Harris, I mean, whichever way around you want to put them. So they always seem to have a bit like Brentford, they always seem to have a replacement in mind when one of their big names is cashed in on.
Well, they need to, and it's been, again, you look at, you're quite right to say, Clem, I mean, talking about Peterborough and that conveyor belt, if you like, have been able to have players that have played for them and then they moved on. And again, it's a model that's been replicated up and down the divisions. But I think with Johnson Clark Harris, they've got somebody of not only physical stature, but presence and character as well, which you get the feeling, having played against Peterborough and having seen how they're led, if you like, and run, that's no place for a wallflower, is it?
Most definitely isn't. I mean, Sunderland, Peterborough, the favourites from automatic promotion on the list that I've got in front. Got Portsmouth, Ipswich, Oxford predicted to be in the playoff places. This is just a rough list that combines all the different sort of betting odds. Fleetwood, I mentioned, didn't I? Charlton, Hull, Blackpool. And then poor old Wimbledon predicted to finish bottom on the list I've got here, just above them, promoted Northampton, Accrington, usual suspects along the line there. Wimbledon, of course, starting life at home at Loftus Road this season until their own stadium is ready. Actually, just a word on, obviously, we've got wage caps and a big adjustment across the league's one and two divisions between a third and half being offered on new contracts. That's, you know, if you've come to the end of your contract and you get offered a new one by the same club or you're going in search of a new one, a lot of players really are contemplating a very new world there, Prutz.
It's tough, and it was brought to my attention yesterday, although before we were talking about Ian Holloway, and he was talking about COVID kind of caveats, if you like, being built into contracts. And I could see it from the club's point of view, absolutely, as a business. I can also see it from the players' point of view of there'll be players that perhaps thought they might have had a year or two left going into this season that's just gone, suddenly realising that the position as a free agent now is more than a bun fight. It's a free-for-all, I think, in certain respects. And it's when you are so used to doing this as your job, as your vocation, as your profession, it is very much uncharted, choppy waters. And it's just the evolving nature of what it is to be a footballer. I still think there is that certain cliche preconception that every footballer you ever come across is at least on 10 grand a week. You know what I mean? There's still a certain minority stream that feel things like that. And just as that has grown exponentially at the very top end of football, it's been brought into sharper focus as you go down the leagues. And it's something that now footballers, hopefully getting the right advice, hopefully making the right decision at the right time, because any form of transfer or any contract you sign is done quite obviously in good faith with the best, with as much information as you've got at your disposal at that specific moment in time. But again, if we'd have been sat here this time last season, there's no way we could have absolutely comprehended at all or foresaw what's happened. And just as the world and global humanity has got to adapt accordingly, so do footballers and football contracts.
Beautifully put. That's exactly as I was going to summarise the League One section, and you've summed it up beautifully. Listen, when we look at the Championship, we need to talk about six new managers, the relegated teams, the promoted teams, the small survivors, as I call them. I mean, obviously, Sheffield Wednesday starting on minus 12 points. Brentford's and Forest that sort of missed out spectacularly at the end of last season. So we've got Ita Karanka back in work at Birmingham. Mm-hmm. Bournemouth and Bristol City have promoted the assistants in Jason Tindall and Dean Holden. Carlos Corberan has left Bielsa's backroom staff at Leeds to take over at Huddersfield. I'm going to try and pronounce this. I'm sure you've been practicing it. Pjelko Pornovic, the Serbian who was in charge in the MLS at Chicago Fire, has taken over at Reading. And Vladimir Ivic, who's also Serbian, twice won the title with Maccabi Tel Aviv, has taken over Watford. I mean, who are your favourites, top of the Championship? Who are you looking at?
I think if you get a Watford side that keeps hold of Troy Deeney, dovetailing with Glenn Murray, yes, we're talking about, I mean, it was specifically with Glenn, I think he's 37 now, but I mean, a tremendous professional, a man that fully understands and appreciates how he's got to where he's got to in his professional life, because that is some journey, isn't it, that he's been on.
But I love them. You're talking about from non-league out to the States. Absolutely. To come back and worked his way up the divisions and an absolute legend down in Brighton.
The bit's still firmly between his teeth, absolutely. And Troy, shots fired at other Premier League strikers with regard to goals that he scored and how much his relative value is, which I thought was fantastic, because very rarely do you get people naming names, dear, nowadays, whereas Troy doesn't give a flying. So he came out and said that. But I think if they have, I mean, with Watford, you could say it's another change of manager, but it's not stood them in that bad a stead too far. Yes, granted, they're back in the Championship, but they've got their own particular way of doing it. Bournemouth, I think if Jason manages to keep all the vital players, which we've seen, particularly in recent days, hasn't been the case, then they've got half a chance. But it's an intriguing way that this division does break down with the names that involve Brentford. I think a lot of the clubs that we look at, that end of the transfer window seems so far away that they want to get through it as soon as possible, maintaining form, maintaining results, because I think Thomas has spoken about almost being resigned to the fact that Saeed Benrahma might be moving on, which I think is a shame.
I wonder whether there's a point, and probably Bournemouth are at it, where they could do with the last one out, which would probably be Josh King, I think, has made it pretty clear he wants to go. And in Brentford's situation, is there a point where actually the manager, if he knows they're going to go, just wants them gone, then he's got a nice clean line in the sand and he can start to push forward?
Well, yeah, and it stops any of the... Because as players, you can't help but be fond of very good players. I firmly put myself in that bracket. You appreciated what players such as that could do and you wanted them to be there for as long as possible. And the minute that they didn't, you didn't begrudge that. You said, well done, thank you very much. Enjoyed my time together. You clap them all away and then you move on from there. So I think there very is an element of that. Other clubs that you would kind of throw into the mix, you've already spoken to him, Neil Warnock, shades of what perhaps happened at Cardiff when he was there, took over at a certain point in the season. Yes, it was earlier on for Cardiff when he took him over. Wonderful end to the season. The next season, he got him into the Premier League. I don't think Borough are quite as close as that, but given the way that he approaches... Well, not just football, but life. You know, I mean, you talked about the age of the fella, but his energy is boundless. His aptitude, his enthusiasm for the game is boundless. Yes, there's been a slight change in personnel there, but moving forward, he managed to get a tune out of the players in a striking sense, which is, you might be able to reflect on this and appreciate this as a Borough fan. Hasn't always been the case, hasn't it? I mean, prolific and Middlesbrough don't tend to go hand in hand, unfortunately.
No, but he's probably a stroke of genius to make Britt Assombalonga his captain, who was pretty disaffected the last couple of years, and suddenly is the kind of carrying the manager's dreams onto the pitch. Cardiff obviously missed out in the playoff. Forest, we've talked about Brentford missing out in the playoff final and missing out on the chance to take automatic. I mean, complete collapse last day of the season. Club you played for twice. I mean... Bit more pressure under Sabri Lamouche this time around, I would suggest, after a finish like that.
I'd say so, yeah. And you could tell, I mean, even off the back of the Barnsley game in the Carabao Cup just recently, he's not the happiest of bunnies, I don't feel, going into the season. But Lyle Taylor coming in, he proved himself early on in the Championship last season that he could score goals at this level. Lewis Grab getting the goals that keeps Forest in a position of competition. Matty Cash is a big miss for them. Tremendous season that he had, and I don't think many Forest fans begrudge him the chance to go and give the Premier League his fullest attention. So that, again, that's another position that they need to be able to fill. But there is pressure on Sabri. I tell you, another one that sticks out, only having discussed it the other day, was Michael O'Neill and Stoke. Yes, there's been a lot made about the malaise at that particular place. Yes, there's been several different managers. And I'll tell you what, he'll have a hell of a lot of players to work his way through that have come from different managers. But just seeing them at the back end of last season, the celebratory mood against Brentford, where they basically assured their status and really kiboshed Brentford's automatic promotion hopes. Something about that, the players involved, they're fundamentally better than where they were last season. They should, and I do believe this as professionals, expect more of themselves. And I'd like to think that come the end of next season, they're not celebrating staying in the Championship. I sincerely hope that's not the case.
Bookies top six, Watford, Brentford, Norwich, who signed players like Jordan Hugel and Ben Gibson, Bournemouth, Stoke, Forest with Cardiff, Derby, Swansea and Borough just outside. I do want to finish just giving a pat on the back to some of the less well-resourced, some of the minnows. I think we need to mention Luton and Barnsley after their great escapes at the end of last season. But, I mean, Coventry City, the job that Mark Robbins has done, two promotions, playing away from home again. I meant to play their games at St Andrews. Paul Warne's had a second promotion with Rotherham. So relegated, promoted. And obviously all eyes on Wickham as well. First time ever in the Championship. And probably not going to change too much. Just keep doing what they've done with very similar personnel, Pruts.
Yeah, and I think you're quite right to flag up these wonderful little stories. And I tell you what, and it's unique, isn't it? We were afforded and privileged enough to be able to kind of scratch the surface with these very teams that you're talking about. I remember I spent the very last club that I played for was on loan at Coventry when they were playing at Northampton, which is as glamorous as it sounds, to be honest. And but having worked on them latterly and them rocking up at the JPT final and bringing what looked like most of Coventry with them, that was their time to shine, to say, look, we're alive, we're still kicking, we might be flagging in certain directions, but this is what we are capable of, this is who we are, and this is what we're built on, don't you forget about it. And what Mark's done to get them baby steps back to where they feel they should be is wonderful. What, like you say, Paul Warne at Rotherham, you spend 10 minutes in his company, my God, that'll teach you a few things about life. I mean that in the best possible sense, because it is the kind of character that's wonderful to chat to. And what Gareth's done, defied the critics by actually being in League One. They're a Championship club. How utterly ridiculous is that? And I don't think he will change too much. He understands that, yes, football is about tactics. It's about having good players, about technical players, about having fit players. It's also, and I'll never tire of saying this, and I'll never tire of feeling it, about the magic of the chemistry of a team. Look at what Chris Wilder's done at Sheffield United. He's transformed that club, that group of players, into a Premier League outfit. Yes, on all the things that you tick the boxes off of the fundamentals, but there's something in the air at Bramall Lane that is just a little bit of magic. And I think what Gareth's done is exactly the same. Plus, any manager that wears a leather jacket on the sideline will do for me.
Pruts, I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed putting the band back together again. Stay well. Lovely to talk to you. We're going to have to fly here because sadly we are just about out of time. Thanks to David Prutton, to Lee Power and to Neil Onnett. Don't forget, if you'd like to get in touch with us, you can do so by emailing EFL@thepodcastworks.com. That's EFL@thepodcastworks.com. If you'd like what you've heard, then make sure you give us a 5-star rating, please. Press the subscribe button and share the podcast on all your socials. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you again next week.
The official EFL podcast.